With the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on a game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Hello, Eagles fans. I'm Chris McPherson, and welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA, and I'm joined alongside Fran Duffy.
Why did that make you laugh, Fran? You just said the name of the show.
It doesn't make me laugh. I'm happy to be here.
He's in a good mood.
I'm like you. He's happy to be here.
Apparently.
We are 58 days away from the start of the 2015 NFL draft. But Wolf,
depending on when you're listening to this.
That's true. As we're filming this, it is 58 days away. And great show for you today. We're going to have Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net. He's going to be our Mr. Relevant.
Some new blood.
To take us inside the pro day circuit to tell us which players need to help give themselves a good workout to help their stock a little bit during the pro day circuit. And also some of the rumblings that he's hearing about. We're going to have one-on-one interviews with Cincinnati linebacker Jeff Luck. You know, the Eagles have had some success with former Bearcats in the past.
Be a lady tonight.
And also Maryland nose tackle Darius Kilgo. And you saw him at the Shrine game, is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, down at the Shrine game.
Long arms. Fit for the Eagles defensive line, as Fran would say.
One of the more surprising combine snubs as well.
Yes.
So a 3-year starter.
Both of
the
them
Terps.
Combine snubs. Luck as well. He was at the Senior Bowl.
Yes.
And our pick six, we'll take a look at free agency. Six players whom the Eagles could select in free agency that would alter the team's draft plans.
Yeah, I think we'll get to that when we get there. But the idea is potential targets for the Eagles, and then what a domino effect of those potential signings would be.
Okay, so we're going to kick things off as we do each and every episode with our Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, we're going to start off our Draft Buzz by looking at some moves made by the Philadelphia Eagles late last week. The Eagles parted ways with longtime guard and tackle Todd Harriman. And earlier on Tuesday, the team released 2-year starting cornerback Kerry Williams. So, gentlemen, just your thoughts on how you think these moves could impact the team's draft plans and maybe even free agency.
Well, the Kerry Williams move is an interesting one because it does free up a lot of cap room, I think over $6 million based on what he was due next season. And listen, we've been talking all offseason about how the secondary is going to be maybe the biggest focus for the Eagles this offseason in terms of turning it over, and it looks like there's a good chance we'll have probably 3 new starters at the 4 positions from last season. Nate Allen's still going to be a free agent. It's possible he returns, but looking like probably 2 new starters on the outside. And it's a pretty good class of free agent corners. I don't think you can expect, you can't pencil in necessarily a guy to come in and start as a rookie. So I think we're looking forward to seeing what the Eagles do in free agency. That said, Brandon Boykin, Nolan Carroll, even Jalen Watkins will all get to compete. So that's going to be interesting. As for Harriman's, I'm sorry to see him go. He's one of my favorite players.
No doubt.
But that offensive line is getting old, and they do need to get younger there. So I think we all sort of knew that that was a possibility with Todd. I'm sorry to see him go. He was a great player for this franchise.
Yeah, 3 of the stars from last season, age 30 and over. The only 2 guys younger, center Jason Kelce. And 2 years ago, the Eagles selected Lane Johnson with the number 4 overall pick. Interesting, Bo, and we discussed this in our big question feature on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. We went into what's going to have more impact, free agency or the draft. And the idea, part of the discussion in that with Dave Spadaro became whether or not you could pencil in a rookie to be a starter, to project him to be a starter right away.
Well, that's the whole idea of free agency in the draft is plugging your holes in free agency so that you have the flexibility to take the best player available in the draft. So you don't know, if say you think that Trey Waynes can come in and start right away, you don't know if he's going to be available at number 20. You don't any player like that. I've always said you fill your holes in free agency, and the draft is for replenishing the overall talent on your roster, looking into the future. So I hope that the draft has more long-lasting impact than free agency, but obviously I think 2015 should see more impact from free agency than the draft.
And I think we've seen that under Chip Kelly over the past 2 years, going into the draft both times where if the Eagles had to line up and play a game on May 1st, they had the bodies in place to be able to do that before they got to the draft. And now you see, I think that'll be the case again this year, where any immediate holes, any perceived needs that they may have, You know, I would imagine that most of those would get filled through free agency, and then that would allow them to be flexible when it came time to draft.
And, you know, listen, you're not going to hit on every free agent signing either.
Sure.
But there's at least a little bit less projection. You're signing guys who you know can play in the league. Whether they're going to fit in your scheme, that's all guesswork. And, you know, as Howie Roseman likes to say, it's getting married after one blind date.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a little bit more information in free agency, and those guys are already in the primes of their career. You're not waiting for them to blossom.
So the Eagles, as you said, Bo, freeing up some cap room with those moves. Again, free agency begins next Tuesday, March 10th, but the courting process can begin this Saturday, where you're allowed to talk to agents of potential or soon-to-be unrestricted free agents. You can't do any visits. You can't agree to terms. You can just start talking contract parameters at that point. All right, the next item on our draft buzz. At the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference over the weekend in Boston, Executive Vice President of Football Operations Howie Roseman discussed the philosophy of trading up in the draft, saying that, quote, "The history of trading up for one player, when you look at those trades, isn't good for the team trading up and putting a lot of resources into it, because the guys who are really good at the draft, if you're hitting on 60% of your first round picks, that's a pretty good track record. And then it's dropping off as you go through the round. So really, the more chances you get, the more tickets to the lottery you get, the better you should be doing." And a lot of people are taking this in terms of Marcus Mariota to see if the Eagles would potentially entertain the idea or the notion of moving up to get him in the draft. Your thoughts on his comments in terms of...
Well, you were the one who was there. So, how did it come off at the panel?
So to me, the first thing I think everyone was probably going to obviously project is, well, what does this mean about the Eagles and Marcus Mariota? I think he was talking big picture, and I think probably more specifically the Julio Jones trade that the Falcons made a couple of years ago. To me, if it's a player, it's a franchise quarterback, and if you believe that you're getting your franchise quarterback, I certainly think it would be worth it to move up. I think you got to look at it a case-by-case basis. I think he's just looking at, if you look at the past, it doesn't mean that you're not going to do it moving forward. It just means that history has shown that it has typically not worked out for the team moving up. That's pretty much what I took away from it.
Yeah, I would agree is that I think it is a case-by-case thing. I mean, not that it's apples to oranges, but a lot of these different scenarios are, you know, Ricky Williams is different from Tony Dorsett, is different from RG3, is different from Julio Jones. I mean, they're all different scenarios with different teams with different needs. I mean, look, it'll be a fun few weeks with all the different discussions, all the rumors floating around. We've talked about it in the past, and we'll continue to talk about it. I mean, it's going to be a fun few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would add is that I wouldn't really place too much stock in the comments themselves. I don't think that they're worth really reading the tea leaves on what exactly the Eagles are going
to
do.
No, absolutely.
And if you look at the Eagles in the draft, they have moved up plenty, especially in the first round.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be the first time that the Eagles have done a draft. Obviously, you just got to weigh the what you're giving up in return to make such a move. So the next item on our draft buzz here, Mike Mayock from NFL Network released his second wave of top five rankings, and I'm not going to go through all of them. You can check them out on NFL.com, but just some of the noticeable names, the big risers. He has LSU's Lyle Collins now as his top overall tackle. Michael Kendrick's brother, Eric, is now the number two linebacker. Southern Illinois' Michael Pruitt, someone who Fran talked about on the program last week, is the number three tight end. Arizona State's Jalen Strong, a Philly native, is the number four wide receiver now. And Byron Jones, who had the phenomenal combine performance, is now the number four cornerback after not being ranked before.
Yeah, and you know, I think everyone will point to the workout for Byron Jones. We talked about him on the program last week as well. I don't know that it's necessarily solely on the workout. And you can look at another guy. You talk about Lyle Collins, who made the jump from 3 to 1. The guys that he jumped, TJ Clemmings and Andrus Pete, both worked out better than Collins did in pretty much every drill. So I don't think that Mike changed his rankings based solely on the workouts. Obviously, a lot of networking, a lot of talking with the scouts. And look, another couple weeks of film work as well has led to this decision.
Yeah, I mean, there weren't too many big changes.
No.
I like seeing a Blake Bell in there as well. He made him his number four tight end. Yeah, I like Blake Bell.
And Nick O'Leary dropped down, and when you talk about the workouts, we kind of knew that this was going to be the case with Nick O'Leary going in. He's one of those guys who's a true throwback player. He doesn't wear gloves. He's got short arms. He's got small hands. He doesn't run well.
Sounds great.
But he catches everything that hits his hands. He's a savvy route runner. He gives a lot of effort in the ground game. So you know, you like Nick O'Leary as a football player, but I think that's probably
not
what you're
as a prospect.
Yeah, I mean that's an interesting discussion.
These tiny hands.
Yeah.
What about Blake Bell? Now he played 1 year.
1 year tight end. Yeah. That's right.
Looks the part.
Yes, he does.
First guy at the Shrine Game looked like a pro.
He's Brian Thomas's second favorite quarterback transitioning to the tight end position. BT, who's the number one?
AJ Derby.
That's right. AJ Derby from Arkansas.
He didn't even show up. He was injured, right?
Supposed to be at the Shrine Game, yeah. And he couldn't play. So
why is that, Brian?
Just love his speed. He made a play against Alabama, come across the middle, made the defender miss. 60-yard play for him? How long?
I was right. It was something. BT came to me. It was in the middle of October, right after November, whenever that play happened. He said, AJ Derby, that's my guy.
All right, there
ever
you
since
go.
Then, there you go.
One play. Scouting analysis right there. Some of the notable fallers on Mike Mack's rankings range from Randy Gregory, the edge rusher from Nebraska, dropping two spots, is now the number four edge rusher. Bernardrick McKinney, falling two spots, is now the number four off-the-ball linebacker.
Not Broderick.
Correct.
Okay.
Next item on our draft buzz, Mel Kiper from ESPN, talking about a receiver who did not make Mike Mack's top five, Philip Dorsett. Kiper believes that after a strong Senior Bowl and combine, the former Miami receiver is in the mix to be a first-round pick. Now, you guys saw him up close at the Senior Bowl.
I like Philip Dorsett a lot, but I don't think I would take him in the first round.
Yeah.
There's not enough size. There's a little too much guesswork about whether the speed is going to be that next level at the next level. And there's too many other receivers in this draft that I think it wouldn't be worth taking him in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. Obviously, if you're looking for a guy to fit that particular skill set, then maybe you would feel differently. But I don't know that you're going to take a guy who's 5'9 and change.
I like him a lot. I mean, no question. Take him in the second round.
No question. But yeah. I just don't know that he's going to be a guy that you're going to take over. Some of these other receivers. The Bashad Perrymans.
Right.
I don't know that personally. I don't know that I'm going to take him over Devin Smith either. That's a whole
I didn't get to circle back with you last week about you saying that Devin Smith was at least as explosive as the
I did
Sean
not say
Jackson.
As at least.
That's exactly what you said.
No, I did not say at least. We'll pull the tape back up. I did not say that he was at least. I said that he was as explosive. And yeah, he didn't. He ran four four one.
As explosive as DeSean Jackson.
We'll pull the clip up, and I know we don't have it available now. But we'll pull it up.
Which is leave a space here in the show.
We'll get it next week.
We'll get it next week. We'll hear you react.
And he ran
4.41. Yeah,
that's
really
nothing.
Slow. Yeah, yeah, right.
Next item on our draft buzz. Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network said on the show Path to the Draft that the wide receiver position group, speaking of receivers, as a whole, is the safest in this year's draft class. Do you agree or disagree? My take, I mean, if you're just going to look at the position group as a whole, it's the deepest. So therefore, I would go with that as the safest. But again, you're not drafting an entire group. You didn't need to worry about the specific guy that you're drafting.
Yeah, and I think this is off an article from Brian Fisher from CFB 24/7 from NFL.com. But he said it in context of in years past, it used to be the wide receivers that was kind of a grab bag. You look in the late 90s, early 2000s, drafting a receiver was not a sure thing. But now you see all these guys come out the past couple of years. And a lot of these guys are having earlier impacts is becoming more of a safer proposition as a team drafting one high. I'll say this. I mean, Amari Cooper might be, maybe other than Brandon Scherff, might be the safest pick in the draft. Amari Cooper is outstanding. So maybe as a whole.
Is he your two or your one right now?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on what you're looking for because they would play different positions. It was like the debate between Sammy Watkins and Mike Evans last year. Mm-hmm. And it's very similar in a lot of ways. But Cooper, I mean, he is he's the best route runner in the draft, no question. He's fluid, he's explosive, he's so smooth. Amari Cooper is a very, very, very good player.
I've heard him compared to Torrey Holt.
That's right. Mike Mayock has compared him to Torrey Holt in the past. I didn't study Torrey Holt closely when he was in the pro, so I don't know how much I can offer on that. But
my just general take is that more and more and more, the very best athletes are going to the wide receiver position. So that's why you see so much talent there. Then that's why generally they'll be safer because they are the best athletes. That makes sense.
That's
what I think.
Again, like Frank was saying, that you're seeing the quicker transition. You look last year at Jordan Matthews, that they are getting more acclimated. And also I think it's the offenses that are being run in college that are making it easier for them to make that transition to the pro game. So again, but it's not just the position group. You got to worry about what your program is. You got to worry about the player you're getting. So, but yes, most likely the wide receiver group would be the safest bet in this year's draft class. All right, so that's going to do it for our Draft Buzz segment, and we're now going to transition into our Mr. Relevant as we bring on Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net to give us some insight into the Pro Day circuit and to give us the latest buzz about some of the prospects, specifically the edge rushers.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
For this week's Mr. Relevant, we bring in our good friend Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net, and he is everything that you need to know about the Pro Day circuit, which is off and running. And Tony, can you talk about what the importance of these Pro Days are? How much stock do teams take into what happens at these personalized workouts?
It's very important, and there could be a lot of stock. I mean, you go back to last year, just look at the quarterback situation. Blake Bortles threw at the combine, then threw well at his pro day, established himself as a top three pick. You know, Teddy Bridgewater did not do well at his pro day, dropped until the very late part of round one. Johnny Manziel, his pro day was nothing special, dropped until the late part of round one. So it's very important for a variety of reasons. You get some guys who don't run at the combine because they're injured. You get some guys who don't run at the combine because they're injured at the combine. You look at Tyler Croft, the story I had broken where he basically re-aggravated his ankle injury. So those guys, somebody like Ibrahim Campbell of Northwestern, who's still suffering from an injury, are going to get their only chance to run during their pro days. And you got to remember, there's a lot of guys who aren't invited to the combine. This is going to be their one and only shot, really, to work out in front of pro scouts because they weren't there in Indianapolis. And then the other thing is, you know, during the combine, the teams are allowed to interview 60 players, 15 minutes each. The interviews at the pro days sometimes are a little bit more in-depth, sometimes a little more relaxed. Teams take players out the night before a workout to dinner, take them out to breakfast the day of the workout, sometimes take them out after the workout, you know, to really get to know them, to get a little bit more involved in those interviews. So it is a big part of the process. I don't think it gets as much notoriety because it's so spread out across the nation.
Tony, the next question I wanted to ask you was, with guys who run at the combine and don't run as well and then run at their pro day with a significantly improved time on a different surface, is that something that you get the sense that teams frown upon, or do they worry about that from the different surface, or do you think it's just kind of a case-by-case basis?
It is a case-by-case basis, and scouts will make adjustments. I mean, historically, the track at Ohio State was super fast. In fact, people thought it was maybe 35 yards instead of 40 yards because the Ohio State players would go at that track and really run so much faster than they did the combine. But scouts will make an adjustment. I mean, if it's not field turf, if they're running on a regular sprint track, you know, they will add anywhere from a tenth to 15 one-hundredths of a second to a time to kind of get it in line with everything else.
Let's look at some of the early pro days that have taken place. Can you talk about, in particular, Davis Tull, the defensive end from Tennessee Chattanooga, and then at Virginia and Minnesota, Eli Harrell, the edge rusher, Kevin Johnson of Wake Forest.
You're taking my Wake Forest question. Unbelievable.
I have to.
Well, the latter two both basically just did position drills and did them well, and they stood on their combine numbers, didn't run the 40s or anything else. So, but Stull was a different case. Stull, you know, when we were at the Shrine Game, you know, couldn't compete the Shrine Game because he's suffering with a shoulder injury. He's actually undergoing labrum surgery, or surgery to repair a torn labrum within the next 2 days. So that kept him out of the Shrine Game. Then he went to the combine with a grade one hamstring injury. He did the vertical jump. He did a broad jump. He did them very well. Still didn't run the 40. Yesterday, what he did was he kind of flipped his workout around. He did linebacker drills first, and he did them very well. He's basically known as an up-the-field type of pass rusher, or that's what he did at Tennessee Chattanooga. They wanted to run him through a battery of linebacker drills. His drops were good. His hip movement, the ability to flip his hips and really lose no momentum, he looked very good there. And then he ran the 40, and he was timed anywhere between 4.55 and 4.59. I asked, you know, why did he run the 40 last? They said because they wanted to get those drills in first. They were afraid that if he ran the 40, he may have re-injured that hamstring, which he eventually did, but they were able to get a time in. Another guy today who was not invited to combine, Corey Grant of Auburn, who is a terrific player, terrific open field ball carrier. My understanding is he ran in the high 4.2s at Auburn Pro Day, was timed around 4.27, which I think will definitely put him into the late rounds.
What about Kevin Johnson, Tony, since the Eagles are now certainly in the market, at least, for an upgrade at the cornerback position?
from what I understood, obviously I wasn't there, looked very good at position drills. There were four DB coaches down there to watch him. I would agree with you. Kevin Johnson, in my mind, is one of the forgotten guys at the cornerback position. Not a big-bodied cornerback, not the six-foot-plus guy that teams want, but someone who's got terrific ball skills. He's tenacious, he's fast, he's explosive, and he's been consistent on the field.
All right, Tony, so you obviously had the main event with the Wake Forest Pro Day yesterday. You had the Auburn one today. What are the other big ones coming up over the next week or so?
Obviously, you want to see both the Florida State, I don't know, it's not the next week, but the Florida State and the Oregon, because you're going to want to watch the quarterbacks throw. That's very important, even though both guys threw well at the combine. You want to see that. Mississippi State is tomorrow. There's going to be a lot of interest in that with Broderick McKinney. A lot of teams going out to watch him. Then you got Nebraska, Randy Gregory. A lot of issues are starting to pop up about Randy Gregory, although he did have a good combine. Next week you got Alabama, which is always a big pro day. So they're well placed out. Next week is also the West Coast. USC is next week. UCLA is next week as well.
There are a lot of talented edge rushers at the top of this year's draft class, and it seems like that the media is putting out a consensus of who are the top guys. What are you hearing on who was atop those rankings, and maybe is there a differing of opinion among team circles?
The ones who have been much ballyhooed in the media.
Much ballyhooed in the media. Thank you for bringing that up. I'm hearing that, there is a variety of opinions, and while some have fallen in love with these guys, a lot of NFL decision makers are not of the same mind. They're not on the same track. I mean, I've heard Alvin Dupree of Kentucky, who I like a lot, has been compared in many aspects to an Aaron Curry type of player, someone who just may not be good enough to play at the next level. I don't agree with it, but that opinion's being passed around. Shane Ray, as well as Vic Beasley of Clemson, a lot of teams are concerned how these guys are going to hold up against the run come Sundays. I mean, they both had, Beasley had a great workout. You watch Shane Ray on film. He's supposed to work out next week. Didn't work out at the combine. These guys are explosive. They're fast, but are they next-level players? How are they going to hold up at the next level in NFL type of defensive schemes? There's a lot of concern about that in the ranks of NFL decision-makers.
Tony, you've talked about Randy Gregory in the past. Is this a guy that you still feel like could fall come draft day?
Is he a defensive end? Is he a linebacker? How is he going to hold up against the run? There are some other outside issues, which I think that I wouldn't be surprised if, everyone projects Gregory as a top five pick now if, he makes a tumble into the first round come the end of April.
Tony, can you provide a preview of some of the prospects who have the most to prove throughout the rest of the pro day circuit?
You want to see some of the guys that had poor pro days kind of pick it up. I mean, Leonard Williams doesn't have a lot to prove, but he had some pedestrian numbers during the combine. I don't know if he's going to run again during the pro day at USC. I think Melvin Gordon is someone who there are questions about him now. Is he really first round material? I think he's going to have to show some good pass catching hands during his pro day. T.J. Yeldon, Alabama next week, really did not have a good combine. Didn't run the 40 well, but more than that, when it came time to transition to the drills, didn't show quick feet, wasn't able to change direction without losing a lot of momentum. A guy like T.J. Yeldon is going to have to have a good pro day, as is T.J. Clemmings today from Pittsburgh, who is probably right now ending his workout, was going to sit on his combine numbers, but a lot of scouts told me going into the combine that Clemmings needed a strong combine and pro day to stay in the first round. They liked his combine. I think today is the second half of that equation.
All right. Our good friend Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net. He'll have daily recaps that you can follow him on Twitter as well, at Tony Pauline. Tony, thanks as always for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.
Now it's time for Pick 6.
All right, for this week's Pick 6, we're going to do a little free agency preview. Six players who, if signed or re-signed by the Eagles, would alter the team's draft plans.
And I think we're all trying to sort of find guys who are potential free agent prospects.
Yes.
And then the dominoes that would fall.
And it's all, obviously, this is all discussion. We're all, we're just trying to
Thanks for catching it. We're not Ed Manowitz here. We're not divulging plans. This is purely speculative.
All right, so I'll start us off.
One who's particular about the way these things go. So that's
all right. So my 1-6. The first guy I wanted to touch on was one of the big names, circling around the media right now because he didn't get tagged on Monday. New England Patriots safety Devin McCourty, easily the best safety on the market in a year where a lot of people aren't very high on the safety class in the draft either. I would imagine that if the Eagles were to sign Devin McCourty, Landon Collins would not be in the picture. So you'd look at a duo there with him and Malcolm Jenkins, two former cornerbacks in the safety group. So the second guy, the Eagles bringing back one of their own, Mark Sanchez. I would imagine that if they were to re-sign Mark Sanchez, that would prevent them from signing or from drafting one of the more developmental type quarterbacks as like a third string quarterback.
Really?
So maybe a Bryce Petty. So I went that route. We'll see. How do you guys react to that?
I would think you could. Who's your third quarterback? If you're going, Nick Foles your starter.
I agree with you. And I actually one of mine is very similar. And I think it's not about the developmental, but it's about sort of the mid tier quarterbacks.
Right.
I think if you're re-signing Mark Sanchez, you could still draft Brandon Bridge in the
seventh
round.
Okay, sure,
that
makes sense.
But you're not going to be one of the teams who's fighting to get Brett Hundley or a Bryce Petty or a Garrett Grayson, the sort of second tier of quarterbacks. You're not going to reach for the second tier of quarterbacks when you've already got a capable backup.
To seemingly be a backup, exactly.
Right. Are you thinking then that those guys are going to go too high, like the Pettys, the Hundleys?
That would be my thought. Yeah. You're not taking a quarterback in the second or third round.
Sure.
Would be my guess.
I would guess.
You could still take one in the first round.
Sure.
But I agree.
Because you still probably need that number three guy. Matt Barkley, obviously, he could fight for the number two spot. He could put his name in the mix there. But I think that's the big question there. So
sure. All right. So for my third one, I went back to the New England Patriots. I went to running back Shane Vereen, a guy who's one of those movable chess pieces on the offensive side of the ball. We saw what he did in the Super Bowl. I would imagine that if you added a guy like that, I don't know that you would add an Amir Abdullah who can fit that same kind of a role. A Duke Johnson, you could plug him in as well to be one of those pass catchers out of the backfield and move them all around the formation. So Shane Vereen, Amir Abdullah, I made that connection there.
Okay.
Another guy, my number four, I went with Denver Broncos offensive lineman Orlando Franklin. He was a guy that was a longtime starter for the Denver Broncos, has played tackle, he's played guard. I would imagine, especially with the release of Todd Hermans, that if you signed Franklin, that he would come in and he would start. I would imagine that if Franklin is added, maybe that would remove Lyle Collins from the fold. Now
I disagree with that one.
This one I knew when I did it. This was probably the one that you could argue the most against. So go ahead.
Well, I just disagree because still, even Orlando Franklin is a good player, but he's not super young either.
Sure.
You still need to replenish the overall talent base of the offensive line in terms of its youth. I think if you got on the board at 20 and Lyle Collins or whoever it is, TJ Clemming, someone like that, is at the top of your board, you would still take him.
But if you've given a lot of money to Orlando Franklin, if you've got money in Evan Mathis, you've got obviously the two tackles, would you want to spend a first-round pick on another one of those guys?
That would be the discussion. I think you might still.
Yeah, you might. Like I said, that was the one where I thought, okay, maybe you would go away from there. Number five, Mason Foster from the Tampa Bay Bucks. I would imagine if you would bring him in, he would be a starter at inside linebacker or at least compete to be a starter. Obviously, we've got D'Amico Ryan's coming off the injury, so you're hoping that he's 100% healthy. But
brought in to compete, we haven't mentioned him.
No question about it. Yeah, Brad Jones is a good signing. So I would imagine if you bring in Mason Foster, Eric Kendricks, Denzel Perryman, those guys possibly may come off the board.
Okay.
I don't 100% agree.
Sure.
Depending on the price of Mason Foster.
Yeah, that's the thing is, you don't know if this is a one-year deal, if it's a three- or four-year deal.
I think you could still take an inside linebacker in the second round.
Wow, but that's interesting.
Do you disagree on maybe the type? Since you pretty much are talking about Kendricks and McKinney as two different types of inside linebackers.
That's
there.
True.
Potentially. I mean, again, we've talked about that in the past. We don't know exactly what they would ideally
want.
Right,
what want. Jim wants, yeah.
Right, so that's up in the air. My final guy, Dwayne Harris from Dallas Cowboys. If you add him as a fourth receiver, as a kick returner, punt returner, would that remove you from, a Philip Dorsett or from one of these other dynamic playmaking wide receivers that could help on the special teams? That would be a guy.
Dorsett's too good for him to be affected by Dwayne Harris, I think. I think it would remove you from a Tyler Lockett, maybe.
Sure.
A guy who's just going to be plugged in as sort of that returner type. But I think if there's a receiver who's still at the top of your board in the first three rounds,
but
you're not going to not take him because you have Dwayne Harris.
I think with all of our picks for this game, I would say that it all depends on what kind of contract you're signing this said free agent to. If you're signing this free agent to a 4 or 5 year deal with lots of money, that's going to affect
that's not what you're doing for Dwayne Harris. That's
well, you don't. I mean, you don't know that it could be a 4 year deal for decent, for average money. I don't know.
Come on,
you never know. There we go.
Nicely done. It will. Nicely done. Okay.
All right. So there's my six. Go ahead.
There's your six. So okay. So I try to take style player. The potential kind of all. I try to take all that into consideration. So with Jerry Maclin, so Eagles hopefully will bring him back. That's why I said guys that could be re-signed. And I went USC's Nelson Aguilar, thinking similar build, similar style of play. You know, I'm not going to rule out a first round wide receiver if Kevin White were to fall. If someone was still there at number 20, that might pique the Eagles' interest. That would be, as Bo was saying with Philip Dorsett, someone who's too good to pass up. I'm thinking of, in terms of a style player, I don't know if you need an Aguilar when you already have Maclin in place.
And I think also what plays in there is Josh Huff is similar type receiver.
Correct.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
Number two, running back C.J. Spiller. So I'm thinking if he comes in to fortify the backfield, you've got McCoy, you got Sproles. Polk is a restricted free agent. But if you were to bring him in, add a little more juice, a little bit of youth there, obviously with Sproles getting up there in age, I was thinking of Tevin Coleman from Indiana. A home run hitter type of running back. If Todd Gurley was there at number 20,
right?
He's someone who, again, Josh Norris thinks he's the fifth best prospect overall in the draft. I wouldn't want to pass on him, but on someone like a Tevin Coleman, maybe someone who I'd pass on.
I think Duke Johnson's a similar type player. You'd probably cross him off in that scenario.
I'll go offensive line Clint Bowling, thinking along the same lines of Orlando Franklin coming in to start at guard. Now, I was thinking that if you get him and you're paying him the big money and you already have money tied up, with most of the stars on the offensive line there, I don't think Cam Irving of Florida State would be the guy that would be in play there in the first round.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. You're trying to compare different skill sets. So that would make sense.
So my thinking.
I could still see it, but it makes sense.
I think there's a better chance you would still take a Lyle Collins or Clemens.
Right, a
potential tackle where Irving, I think, is pretty much going to be an interior guy. I went edge rusher Jason Worlds of this formerly of the Steelers, scheduled to hit the market. And I compared to a Bud Dupree of Kentucky. Now, obviously, as Tony Pauline said, there are some differing opinions. But if I'm looking at the roster the way it sits now, I'm thinking if you're bringing in Worlds, you're going to have, obviously, Marcus Smith there. I don't know if you're going to be investing another first-round pick at the position. Thinking with, I'm going through my thought process. I'm trying to think who could be there at 20.
Right.
And there's some mocks that think that Dupree will be gone by 20. But if you get to 20, I don't know if you're really going to be investing another first round pick at the
my
position.
Only hang up is that it's just such an important position. Getting pressure on the quarterback is such an important position that if you had a guy at the top of your board who you think can get after the quarterback consistently and wreak havoc, I think you would still take him, but certainly would make it less likely.
I'm gonna go now to the defensive backfield for my last two. Byron Maxwell, supposedly going to be the top free agent corner to hit the market unless Darrell Revis comes free of the Patriots. The Patriots have to make a decision on him by the end of this week. So I think if you're not going to go him, now I'm not going to completely rule out a corner at 20, so I'm thinking of which player maybe would be less likely, and I'm thinking Marcus Peters of Washington would be the guy there. I'm thinking maybe Jalen Collins is someone who would be coming in and doesn't have as much experience. Again, I think only 10 starts is it for his career. Maybe he's a guy who can develop. So I'm thinking of a Marcus Peters type player. Maybe with those off-field question marks, maybe he's someone who's less likely to come there.
I mean, this is a very tough exercise because we have to find 18 potential free agent targets, so we're reaching a little bit. Generally speaking, I was trying to avoid corner and offensive line because I think those are the two positions where I could see the Eagles doubling up.
Yes.
And not to mention, obviously, you can double up because there's two spots available. It's the same thing when we talk about the offensive line. Yeah, sure, there's one guard that's available, but, there's another one as well. So.
Right.
Makes it tough.
Because I was actually working on this exercise before the Kerry News Williams.
Right.
Kerry Williams news came out. So my last guy, and I stayed in the defensive backfield, I went Devon House of the Packers, and the player who I took off the board was Eric Rowe of Utah. And I'm thinking when you compare size, skill set, you figure House is a guy who I think could come in and he would transition nicely into the system. Physical, good size. I just feel like an Eric Rowe type player might come off the board. And again, that's why I'm trying to couch it as who they would completely take off the board. I don't know, but I still think there's a chance they could address corner. They still could address the defensive backfield.
Yeah,
area.
And Rowe has that versatility where I feel like he'd still be on the board. I don't think he's the best player. I don't think you pass on him because you have Devon House. But again, so it's a tough.
I was thinking Rowe like more of a second round.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Type guy. So, those are my six.
There you go.
All right. So, like I said, I tried to avoid corner and offensive line because I could see the Eagles investing heavily in the offseason at those positions. But I'll start a wide receiver where if the Eagles sign Randall Cobb, and in this scenario, I assume that means that there's no Jeremy Maclin. The Eagles sign Randall Cobb, who's under 6 feet. You've already got Josh Huff. You're probably not drafting Philip Dorsett or Antoine Goodley, players like that.
Sure. That makes sense.
Yep.
Work something else into the mix. If the Eagles sign Mark Ingram, the Saints running back,
okay,
downhill guy, sort of a rich man's Chris Polk, I guess. I would be surprised then if the Eagles drafted David Cobb, similar type player.
Okay, I like that. With okay,
you.
Yeah.
This one we already talked about. If they sign Jake Locker, they're probably not going to get Bryce Petty or Garrett Grayson.
Yeah, you love Jake Locker.
I think he. Well, just. The type of guy, you know.
You want that project.
He has starting experience. He has athleticism. He played in the Pac-12. You know, seems to make sense.
Sure.
Okay, if the Eagles sign Raheem Moore, the safety, I think that means...
We debate for this one, too.
I think that means no Landon Collins. Even though,
I would agree.
Even though the Eagles could use a long-term safety, Raheem Moore is pretty young. Him and Malcolm Jenkins, you're probably not taking a first-round safety.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
If the Eagles sign... Texans outside linebacker Brooks Reed. We know the Eagles love their former Texans defenders. And this is an interesting one because Brooks Reed's top mock draftable comparison is Brandon Graham. So
really?
You could see a scenario where he is replacing Brandon Graham at that spot if it comes to that. My thinking here is that if you're taking Brooks Reed, you're penciling him in to start. That doesn't mean you won't necessarily take a first-round pass rusher if there is a guy who's a stud who's there, if you think Beasley or Dupree is that guy. But you're probably not taking a guy with a little bit more projection in the second round, so I'm saying no Haole Kikaha.
I like that.
I thought of him. Actually, Kikaha comes up when you search Jason Worlds.
Okay.
And mock draftable. Yeah. So I was considering. I did consider him.
You guys love the mock draftable, man.
Yeah,
it's fascinating. Well,
it's good. Great. It's fun. No, sure.
All right, my last one. I did break my rule, sort of. A cornerback. If the Eagles sign...
you didn't sort of. You broke it.
Well, you'll see.
All right,
you'll see.
Go ahead.
If the Eagles sign Antonio Cromartie.
Okay.
Big corner, of course. He's a little older, though.
Yep, no question.
A little older. So I think if the Eagles draft Antonio Cromartie, sign Antonio Cromartie, they will not be drafting Gene Siffrin because there'll be too many old guys on the roster.
They had to get the age in there somewhere.
Yeah.
That's good.
So,
in fact...
UMass tight end, 35 years old.
We talk about Josh. We refer to Josh Norris's rankings. His podcast went heavily into the age discussion.
Oh, yeah, I listened to it.
Yes,
good listen.
Yes. Yeah. So, and I was thinking of Bo the whole time there.
Yeah. So there you go. That was my six.
I was like, yep, Bo's probably listening to us right now and tell him, friend, there's the age.
There's the age.
Especially with specifically skill position players.
Yeah, well, that's because that's the Roto-Viz guy. That's what they're doing fantasy stuff. So that's what they're really looking at.
Yeah, sure thing. So the next guy, one of the guys, unfortunately we didn't get a chance to hit on in our pick six, but we did get a chance to talk to at the Senior Bowl, Cincinnati linebacker Jeff Luck.
The unofficial visit.
All right, here now in the Renaissance Hotel down at the Senior Bowl with Cincinnati linebacker Jeff Luke. And Jeff, for fans that have yet to see you play, give them a quick scouting report of what they can expect to see you from you on the field.
I start off by saying 260.
Okay.
You guys won't be able to.
That's,
that's something you definitely probably see first.
That's not the when you look at the other linebackers here at 260 pounds. I mean, you tower over these guys in terms of size.
Yes, at times I do. There's a lot of other big guys around here, different position, but yes, I say 260. Really a guy that can just flat out. I really think I can really move. Especially just by me being this weight and the way I can flip my hips and get in and out of breaks and really just covering guys and different things like that. So I really think that's something you guys will really enjoy seeing.
Is there a trait that you feel like sets yourself apart from other linebackers in this group?
Definitely to be a linebacker, you got to come downhill, and that's going to happen regardless.
Yeah.
It's like saying a receiver catches well, that's something he do.
Yeah.
But like I said before, just moving sideline to sideline.
One of the biggest collisions of the week by far, earlier today, we're filming this on Thursday, the final day of practice, you took on Yale fullback Tyler Varger in the hole, one of the biggest collisions, I think, of the Senior Bowl so far. Talk about just your ability to play within the tackle box and defend against the run.
I didn't even know that was one of the biggest collisions. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
I like him. Good size. Very good size.
Is your ability to take on fullbacks and offensive linemen and shed blocks, is that a trait that you feel is very important?
Yes, that's an advantage I have as well. And since I've been using my hands more, I've been really seeing a lot of results.
You talked about Varga. What player do you think on the other side have you seen that's probably the best player here at the Senior Bowl on the offensive side?
The offensive side, I like the running back from Nebraska.
Okay, Amir Abdullah.
I'm kind of biased because we go against each other and just about everything else.
Yep.
I also like the our receiver from Washington.
Okay, yeah, that would be Vince Bailey. Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Okay.
And another thing I've been hearing a lot about is to switch it up, go on the other side or the other team. The DN from Nebraska, not Nebraska, from Missouri.
From Missouri, Marcus Golden.
Golden.
Okay.
Yes. So I've been hearing a lot about him.
So is there a guy like when you've gotten down here, the other linebackers in your group on the North squad, is there another guy that you feel like you kind of see eye to eye, okay, this guy's got a similar skill set to me?
I think all our linebackers are good.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, anybody would say that, but I really do think all our linebackers are good. And we got a few guys that will surprise you. I say the sneakers, and we have guys that will we just have all type of linebackers. We have somewhat the same but different style. At the same time, we have our own signature move or signature thing that we do, but at the same time, I like all our linebackers, and I'm very proud and happy just to be around them guys.
All right, last question, Jeff. Is there a player in the NFL right now that you kind of pattern your game after, you would say, you know, is very comparable to your skill set?
Definitely the boys from 49ers.
Okay, Patrick Willis, Navarro Bowman, okay.
I've been watching the linebackers from Cincinnati, especially because I've been in that area for the last 3 years, so I've been watching the Cincinnati linebackers. You know who can go wrong with going with a linebacker from the Panthers?
Luke Kuechly, okay,
yeah,
right, yep.
You know, it's just different things you try to pick up from other linebackers.
All right, excellent. Well, Jeff, appreciate the time, and hope to see you in Philadelphia one day.
Appreciate it. Take care.
On the clock.
All right, fellas, it's time for On the Clock. Let's get to Would You Rather.
Big fan of Would You Rather. Please play along at home.
All right, we're back to it. eyes once again on free agency. Let's start at the quarterback position. Would you rather the Eagles re-sign Mark Sanchez,
okay,
or draft Brett Hundley in the second round?
To me, I would take Mark Sanchez. I would take the known commodity. I would go Mark Sanchez.
I would probably go with Brett Hundley in that scenario. You're going to have Nick Foles, who's been in the system a couple of years now. You've got Matt Barkley, who's been in the system for a few years now. I know Chip's thing is you got to have two good quarterbacks. This is really going to be Barkley's year to step up. Keep talking about him. But you got to think about down the road because Nick is in the contract year. So I'm going to go with the second round pick.
Is it weird that I think I would be more comfortable if the Eagles took Brett Hundley in the first round than if they took him in the second round? Because that would mean that Chip like really believes in Brett Hundley, thinks that he's the guy for the future.
It's fair.
That's a fair point.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
I would probably go with Sanchez. Sort of for that reason, just to have this extra second round pick. But like I said, it'd be interesting. I'd almost rather have Hundley in the first round than him in the second round. Okay. Would you rather have the Eagles sign Raheem Moore at safety and Kareem Jackson at cornerback?
Raheem Moore and Kareem Jackson. Okay.
Or sign Byron Maxwell at corner and DeJuan Landry at safety.
All right. So this is the classic So you have your best player.
You've got a better safety and an okay corner, or a better corner and an okay safety.
I like B. I like the Maxwell. Maxwell, I think, is going to fit perfectly in this defense. You know, Landry, I don't know too much about, but I know you bring the veteran presence. The idea of Kareem Jackson and Moore, not the most enticing. So
okay.
And to me, also, I would rather, if you sign Dewan Landry, that doesn't prevent you from drafting, say, Landon Collins in the first round.
Yeah.
So I would go with that option as well.
I think I would agree. I'd rather have Maxwell potentially the best of the group.
Take the best of the group. Okay. Sure.
Similar one here. Would you rather the Eagles re-sign Brandon Graham and sign Alan Ball at cornerback?
He's intriguing.
Or would you rather the Eagles sign Jason Worlds and Devon House?
Ooh, that's interesting.
It is interesting. Graham is, I'm going to go to what Howie said. You have the known commodity.
Yes.
With Brandon Graham. And he's someone who is talking about trading up. The Eagles invested a lot to move up for him in that 2010 draft. You see him develop to the point where he's a very efficient pass rusher. Hasn't had starters experience, you know, in a couple of years. And that's really the big question with him in moving forward is, if you're going to pay him a free agent type contract, are you projecting him to be a starter? Or are you going to increase his role? I would think you would have to. And he's also been a very good special teams player, a dynamite special teams player for this team. You go back to your eye in the sky where you have that knockout shot from week one against Jacksonville. So I probably would lean more toward that situation.
I also like Alan Ball, as you,
yeah,
as you said.
Yeah, I do too. I think that he would be intriguing, and I think he would come for less money too than Devon House. I might be wrong on that, but
I also think that Brandon Graham will be more expensive than Jason Worlds.
That's fair. Well, maybe.
Well, we don't know what Worlds will be worth because he got the transition tag last year.
I would go Graham.
I think I would too. Okay, this one is, we might need a chart for this one because I went a little too far.
All right. Oh, God. Write it down.
This is four on four.
Four on four. All right, go ahead.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
The Eagles re-signed Jeremy Maclin.
Okay, I like this.
They signed Steven Wisniewski to play guard, even though he's a center.
Former Penn State.
But he's big enough. He's big enough to play center. Sure. Athletic enough. They also signed Akeem Ayers at outside linebacker.
Okay.
And they draft Jalen Collins in round one.
Jalen Collins in round one. All right.
Now, would Akeem Ayers be an outside linebacker in this scheme?
Yeah, he would be a pass rusher.
Yeah.
Okay. He would be a pass rusher, for
okay.
sure. Or
the Eagles sign Andre Johnson at wide receiver.
Okay.
They sign Mike Iupati at guard. They sign Buster Screen on the outside. And they draft Vic Beasley in round one.
Hmm.
I would definitely go option A. Without even like looking at it too closely, I think I'd definitely go option A.
Really? I'd go B, I think.
Really?
The only thing that's much better about option one is Jeremy Maclin, which is great.
Well, you guess you'll have a starting guard in Wisniewski. Obviously, you would have the better one, Iupati.
Right.
Key manager, Buster Screen.
See, Buster Screen, he's on the smaller end. I don't know that he's...
Yeah, he's not a great fit.
He's not a great
fit. But I was trying to work in another cornerback name. We've talked about almost every other free agent corner.
That's true. To me, I'd still go option one. I mean, Maclin, I think Wisniewski could be a very good player, in this system. I think Akeem Harris, as a third or fourth pass rusher, I think Akeem Harris can fit that role. He showed that he could do it in New England after he was traded there from the Tennessee Titans. And Collins is a good developmental player. So, and he has better scheme fit than Screen. I would go option A.
What does Andre Johnson have left? That's the big question. Because the fact that the Texans...
He might not have... Remember, Kerry Williams said he didn't have much left. But
yeah.
So...
I mean, if the Texans, I think it was Bill O'Brien who reportedly said that, you know, you're going to have 40 catches and, you know, X amount of yards and you're not going to be a starter. If your own coach is projecting that.
Right.
Because you're going to, I mean.
Well, that's why they let him go.
Of course. Right. But, well, the cost, I'm sure, on top of it.
Well, yeah, I guess that's an unknown. I don't know how much he's really going to go for in the open market. But
yeah.
Anyway, we went a little too far.
That's all right. That's an interesting one. That's a good one.
Okay.
I'm a package A, by the way. I don't know if I was on the record. But.
Okay. All right, I got one more.
Okay. Oh,
would you rather only be allowed to watch third quarters for the rest of your life? That's all you can ever watch of a football game and basketball game. Any sport that is in quarters, you can only watch the third quarter.
So soccer?
No, that's half. Yeah, no, soccer and hockey and baseball are exempt.
Okay, so baseball's okay.
Just games with quarters.
Well, these are games. These are civilly sports I don't watch anymore anyway.
Okay. Or.
Or.
For the rest of your life, you have to wear wool winter gloves forever. Now, the caveats are.
Are they mittens or gloves?
They're gloves, not mittens, but they're wool. So it's gonna be tough to type and everything.
Can they be the ones with the little finger pads?
They do. You will be able to use yes.
An iPhone.
You will be able to use an iPhone.
That's a deal breaker.
Caveats are, you can take them off in the shower.
Okay.
That's it.
Eating?
No, you have to wear the gloves. Everything, you have to wear the gloves. One day a month, you get to take off one of the gloves.
I'll be watching third quarters of football and basketball games. Because you could just watch the highlights.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You're allowed to watch the highlights? And is this only a live?
No.
So, you
are not allowed to watch highlights. You're allowed to read what happened in the game.
So when I watch tape for Eagles game plan,
yeah,
I can't watch the fourth.
Nope.
I can't watch the
You have to base it all in the third quarter.
Only the third quarter.
Well, I got to take the gloves then. I got to take the gloves. So there you go. So, Mac, you're taking
I'll take the third quarters.
I'll take the third quarters. Yeah, I'm not wearing. It's going to be 80 degrees out. You're going to have wool gloves on your hands walking around.
Aside from looking like a doofus. Like,
it's not practical.
Can make it work.
Would you rather have trust
you have
or
like,
love?
You have like a, you have a, the first time you hold your baby, you have to have wool gloves on? Come on.
Well, maybe that's just the one day a month. Can I decide the 1 day a month?
Of course. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, there's the 1 day.
Okay.
All right.
I don't exactly know how Darius Kilgo ties into
this. That was my
next
would you rather. Would you rather this game continue or would you rather listen to a one-on-one interview with Darius Kilgo?
I think it would be option B.
Maryland defensive lineman from the Shrine game.
I don't think the listeners have a choice in this matter either.
They've all chosen Darius Kilgo. We've answered for them.
The unofficial visit.
All right, we're here with Darius Kilgo, Maryland defensive tackle. And Darius, what has this been week like? What has this week been like for you so far?
I mean, it's been a great experience, you know, just coming out, you know, and being able to work with some of the elite players of the college, you know, football league. And, you know, I just look forward to competing every day and getting better. And, you know, I'm enjoying myself.
For someone who has never seen you play before, what would you say is the scouting report? What do you do best and what do you need to work on?
I think I bring, you know, a lot of leadership by example. You know, I'm a guy that's always going to be on top of things. You know, I hold myself accountable for a lot of things. You know, I bring a lot of energy to the field. You know, I just try to bring the defense together as a whole. So, you know, those are things, you know, when I step on the field, I'm the best defensive tackle on the field. So, you know, I just bring a lot of confidence and leadership to the team.
How about what are the things you need to work on?
Just technique things, you know, little things as a football player, you know, that can put you in a place to get better, you know, each and every day. So just little things that, you know, technique wise that I think I can improve on to get better.
When you go to bed at night dreaming about making a play, is it sacking the quarterback or is it stopping a running back in the backfield on fourth down?
Hey, man, I mean, whatever, you know, brings excitement to the defense, you know, whether that's sacking the quarterback, you know, or making a tackle for a loss, you know, just being able to do my job. And, you know, if the opportunity presents itself, then, you know, I'm going to take advantage of it.
A couple questions we like to ask everybody. Who is the best player you played this season?
The best player, you know, I played some of the great, you know, the running back. So, you know, Melvin Gordon, you know, I played JT Barrett. So, you know, Connor Cook, you know, so I've played, you know, it's a lot of elite talent, you know, in the Big Ten, you know, and I enjoyed myself. So, you know, Wisconsin was up there, you know, Ohio State, you know, they just won the Natty. So it was pretty good competition.
And how about anybody in the league who you sort of pat on yourself after, who you think you have a similar game to?
No, I just try to watch a lot of tape, you know, on those tackles in the league. You know, the Glenn Dorseys, you know, the Dontari Poe's. You know, just try to improve my technique and, you know, try to, you know, nitpick some things off of them just to make myself better.
And then finally, when it comes to 4-3 versus 3-4, do you feel more comfortable in either one or do you feel like you could do both?
I feel like I can do both. And, you know, I can play the nose in the 4-3. I can play the 3 in the 4-3. I feel like I can play the nose in the 3-4, you know, possibly move up and down in the 3-4. So, you know, I feel pretty versatile.
All right. Well, Darius, best of luck throughout the draft process. Maybe we'll see you in Philadelphia.
Sounds good.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
I don't know how we can top Would You Rather, but we are going to go into the draft
fan
mailbag.
Interaction, that's how.
That is true. So we're going to go to Draft Mailbag. You send us your questions on Twitter with the hashtag EaglesDraft, and we're going to answer. We've got four questions here where you picked out. So first one comes from at wants to know our thoughts on athletic rankings, ratings, things along like Spark. What are your thoughts on those?
To me, I think it's a tool that you use to help with...
Oh, I thought you were going to say another tool in the toolbox.
It's not another tool in the toolbox.
Well, it is.
It is another tool in the toolbox, but it wasn't what I was going to say. But to me, it's like, you know, his height and weight, his arm length and hand size, his mental capacity, his criminal record, his medical history, his age. It's not something that you look at and say, it's okay, black or white. If this guy doesn't meet this athletic profile, you know, he's not a good fit or he is a good fit. But it's just another tool to help you make a decision. That's the way I've always seen it.
I agree. I mean, it's the more information, the better. That's as you look to make these blind date marriages, the more information you have to make these educated decisions, the better you are. So yeah, I mean, I think they're important. I'd rather take all else being equal, I'd rather take an athletic cornerback than a guy who can't explode. I mean,
right.
So,
but well, I mean, there's also plenty of guys, and you know, not that you don't know this, but there's also plenty of guys that are crazy athletic that don't pan out because they're not right upstairs, or you know, they've got a bum knee or whatever else. So I think that it helps to find scheme fits. It may help to eliminate certain guys from certain areas of the draft. But again, you know,
let me ask you this question: are there positions where you think it's more important?
Yeah, I think so. And each position has a certain level of importance. You know, I think linebacker has grown in importance. Obviously, the cornerback and wide receiver positions I think are very, very important for athleticism. Safety has grown in importance because of just the way that we play the game now. You can be an unathletic safety and play in certain roles, but you're not going to play every down. Certainly not going to play every down in the back end. So. I think athleticism has definitely grown in importance as the game has developed to what we've seen today in terms of the importance of the passing game. But, it's interesting.
I mean, it seems like Chip Kelly has an athletic profile that he wants for the positions. And I think his saying is that if you start taking exceptions, you're going to have a team full of exceptions
right.
by the time it's all said and done. So I agree with you, Fran, on the standpoint that it's something you utilize. It's not the end-all, be-all. But
especially for the college prospects, it's maybe a little bit different than when you're evaluating, pro prospects, guys you're going to sign in free agency. Because, if you look at a guy like D'Amico Ryans, he certainly isn't the athlete that he was coming out of Alabama. He's not the athlete that some of the other guys that may be available in the free agent market are. But his instincts and his leadership and all the off-field, the things that he brings to the table from a mental standpoint and being able to set the defense and make all the defensive calls, those maybe make up for some of the athletic limitations. The same thing with Ray Lewis, late in his career. I mean, he couldn't, get sideline to sideline for the last couple of years of his career. So maybe, there is a weighed scale, I think, with certain positions.
Certainly would agree with that. Next question comes from at JChapmanI65, wants to know, what is the best scheme and team fit? I should say actually position fit and team fit for one Shaq Thompson of Washington. Now, we've discussed him on the program before, so.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think he's a linebacker, but I think there's certainly, regardless of what he is, and we've talked about this in the past, we talked about it at the Combine a couple weeks ago, regardless of what position he is, he's still going to fit a certain role. I think he's probably best fit in kind of a run and chase kind of role, definitely closer to the line of scrimmage. Whether you see him as a safety like a Deion Buchanan or you see him as a linebacker like a Michael Kendricks, you want to utilize his athleticism, ability to play sideline to sideline. I think he still has to improve as a tackler. I think he still has to improve his instincts and be more consistent, being able to key and diagnose things, his discipline and coverage, things like that. But, you've got a guy with that athleticism, that versatility. I mean, you're going to have, a multitude of scheme fits. So
can he play that Buchanan role?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, because you're asking him to play near the line of scrimmage, and blitz and flow to the football, play man coverage against tight ends and against running backs. He could do that, but I don't think that he's going to line up in the back half and play, as a single high safety or play in the slot over wide receivers. I don't think he's going
to
do that.
Where I'd most like to see him is along the Cowboys offensive line.
Sure. That would be a great fit for us.
Yeah.
There you go. Next question comes from at Kev Moss. Wants some insight into two secondary players, Samford's Jaquiski Tartt and Wake Forest, Kevin Johnson.
Oh, this is interesting. This is BT's favorite player and Bo's favorite player.
He's not my favorite player.
One of your favorite players.
I just think he's the best player.
There we go.
He's not my favorite. Kevin Johnson was good. We talked about him with Tony Pauline earlier. The big question is can he get bigger? And he did get bigger in his college career. I think he came in at about 150, but he's got that sort of slight upper body. Can he get bigger? I guess, I don't know. And how important is that on the outside? But I think he'll be a top 40 pick probably. He's got the length. He's got the coverage ability, all that good stuff. And Jaquiski Tarn, I like him a lot. I think he's right in the mix with sort of that second group of safeties who nobody really wants to say that there's a two or a three. Everybody after Landon Collins is sort of fighting for second, third, fourth round potential. So I like Jaquiski Tarn. He was good at the Senior Bowl.
Yep.
All accounts, I talked to the NFL Network guys. I said he's a great interview. So I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, Tart's interesting. I mean, fearless against the run, will come down and tackle ball carriers in the flats. Has good speed off the hash, and he ran a 4.53. Backed that up at the combine. He's got to improve his instincts. I think he flashed good ball skills, but it wasn't always naturally there. And Kevin Johnson, when he played with good technique at Wake Forest, he was very, very good. He tested very well athletically, which it was surprising for a guy who's 6 foot with that length. So, both guys I think are intriguing. I would agree that Tart's kind of fighting for that. Top two, top three safety ranking along with the other guys.
He's got just an all-world name, so I'd love to have to be able to write Jaquiski Tarn and say it every day would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to have him on the Eagles to be able to write it and say it every day. So
that's true.
Can wake up in the morning, Jaquiski Tarn. Our last question comes from @LovelyBuckeye. Interesting question. I'm kind of changing and modifying the question itself.
Okay.
Well, wants to know.
So this is a question from Chris McPherson from Philadelphia.
Exactly. Higher target for the Eagles, list three positions, quarterback, cornerback, and guard. And I'm thinking maybe we should just rank in terms of what's the top priority for the Eagles to address.
I would say quarterback, cornerback, guard.
Yeah, I think I would go. I mean, to me, if you ever have a need at quarterback, whether it's perceived need or whether the team that supersedes everything. So to me, it would be quarterback, and I would say, especially now. I mean, Bradley Fletcher is going to be a free agent. Kyrie Williams is no longer here. Corner's got to take precedent, and then guard. I would agree.
The question, I mean, comes down to Nick Foles and what's his
right.
age going to be.
But I think I build that into the like. Deciding what you think about Nick Foles is number one.
Sure thing. Absolutely.
So if you think he's a guy, fine.
That's your decision. Number one, you move on. No doubt.
I guess I'm taking as if you think he's the guy, then I put quarterback, obviously,
number
further
three.
Down
right.
the list.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's sort of how I address it. So.
Yep. Yeah, it all depends on how you see it.
All right. So that's going to do it for this edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Special thanks to our guest, Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net. Again, follow him on Twitter at Tony Pauline for the latest on what's going on with the pro days. And it's going to do it for us this week. And we'll be back again to record next Tuesday. So hopefully
next Tuesday.
Free agency bonanza. We'll see.
A free agency bonanza show. Indeed. So everyone, thanks for listening here to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.